Well, good evening. It's Martin North here from Digital Finance Analytics, and great to have you on board tonight. Welcome to this live stream event on, of course, 26th of January, 2021. And as normal, I just want to go through a couple of points before we get into the show and I bring Tony in. Just want to remind you that this is not financial advice that we're running here tonight, that the conversation will be general in nature, and we can't obviously cover specific circumstances or indeed provide financial advice on the channel. So please take it in the spirit in which is offered. Also, do play nice in the chat room. We do moderate the stream, and if there are racial slurs that come up, we will take them down and we will silence people accordingly. This is as of the 20th of January 2021. If you would like to get my attention or indeed ask a question direct to Tony, use @walktheworld. That means that you'll be sure to get my attention. I've also enabled Super Chat, which means that if you want to make sure that your question gets the top of the list, you can do that. And it's also a mechanism by which you can also make a contribution to support what we do. I have to say that we don't make a lot of money off the channel here, but what we do is do it because we think it's really important that people get some alternative voices with regard to what's going on in finance and property at the moment, particularly now. And so all contributions greatly received. And with that introduction done, I think it's time to bring Tony in. Tony, are you there?
Certainly am, Martin, and congratulations on 50,000 subscribers. More viewers than a Channel 10 morning show, I think. No, it's a credit to you. It's a credit to the information you provide. And I'm just absolutely chuffed to be a part of this channel. And oh, look, I'm just going to say to viewers that I donate about $250 a year to this channel. I think others should do the same, even though this is probably the best thing to happen to my business, Martin.
I'll be honest with you. Yeah. Glad it helps your business. And, you know, we always love having you on the channel, not least, Tony, because you call it as it is. And, you know, people will love it or hate it, but at least they know where you're coming from, which is great. And, you know, actually, a lot of the comments have been very positive. I will just put this one up because I think it's quite funny. This is from Nico, and thanks, Nico, for the super chat. Really appreciate that. HMX up 18% yesterday. Nice one, Tony.
Yeah, we had a nice copper discovery up in Queensland, and one of my stocks just fell short of tripling in a day. So I've got a room full of Verve champagne, and I thought, well, I might as well drink a bottle on the show tonight, very slowly, so people should realise I'm not under the influence of anything. But look, I'm here to polarise. I'll be honest with people. I've learned to brush aside negative comments. I do things my own way, whatever I do working, and that's it. So, yeah, I'm here to polarise, have a bit of fun. And I'm also not afraid to tell people exactly what I'm doing with my own money and how I'm trying to live a simple life, Martin.
Yeah, well, thank you. And Tony, I think that polarization issue is one that people recognize. But, you know, the fact is that the perspectives that you have are very potent and I think very appropriate, given where we are broadly so far as the economy is concerned. And, you know, as with all of the things that are going on at the moment, and in fact, I titled tonight's show, you know, where we are, you know, because there's a lot of uncertainty about where we are, isn't there?
Yeah, most definitely. And I think we're in the most dangerous financial times that this generation will ever see. So what I've done is I've put together a brief slideshow which will explain my results from last year. I copped a lot of flack for mentioning stocks on your channel, Martin. But again, I've just got to ignore that because, I've been playing with stocks 22 years, advising on it. And the stock market, I believe, is the best place to make money. And I think a lot of people are scared of it. So, I'm happy to run through a slideshow for viewers. And obviously, we'll have a more relaxed chat after it, Martin.
Yeah, terrific, Tony. And there's a few comments I've just been sharing. Is that one from Tom here, sipping the champagne. Aha, I love it. Very good.
Well, I've got a room. You know, my clients that have made a lot of money and send me alcohol, I think that's the most lazy gift you can get. But the warning is, if I ever get spirits, I re-gift it. So anyway, just saying.
Very good. Well, look.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to share my screen.
Yeah, I was going to say, Tony, so let's just, so everyone's clear. You're going now to make a presentation, which will be basically about some of your stocks and your perspectives and things. What I suggest we do is we ask people to hold off asking questions at this point in the show, and then we'll come to the questions asked afterwards, and then we'll go into a broader discussion. So I'll let you have the full screen and give you control, and then take it from there, Tony.
All right. Is that working, Martin?
Perfect.
All right, so here we are, the live show. That's my details there if people want to email me. I'm actually swimming in new clients at the moment, and I am struggling to keep up. But again, I need to pick and choose who I deal with. Obviously, I've got people that have been with me for 20 years. So at some point, you know, I've got to switch the phone off because, I mean, one day last week, 100 phone calls and 65 tickets. I mean, more tickets than an inner city parking cop. But, you know, that's how I operate. I love what I do. But anyway, I'll move right along. So there's the disclaimer, which pretty much this is general advice. I don't know your financial situation. The world of finance is quite volatile. I certainly don't want to get sued over anything. People should realise that at all times I'm simply doing my best. I've got no sneaky agreements with anyone. I'm here to try and provide a different perspective for your viewers. And so that's basically my defence against being sued. So a bit about me, for the new viewers, I grew up on the northern beaches of Sydney, mainly in French's Forest. I was schooled in Chatswood, so I got to know that Chatswood area quite well. I then had a stint on the Sunshine Coast, and despite coming in the top 5% in the HSC, I actually took the lazy approach and became a cop. So pretty much from 91 to 98, I was in the New South Wales Police with a year in between in the Queensland Police. I was then final station was at Canterbury Transits. So my role in the Transit Police was pretty much to patrol most of Sydney. So I'd patrol the trains, ferries, buses. And so I had quite a large area and I got to know Sydney quite well. I then, during that period, I taught myself the stock market. I must admit that sometimes in full uniform, I'd walk to the stock exchange in Bond Street. And these are the days where every share price flashed up. And I started talking to some people about the stock market and I just fell in love with it. So my focus is finding value. That's all I care about. And that extends from the property market to finding cheap almond milk. I've got about 40 things of almond milk in the spare room with the champagne. I've accumulated about an 8-year supply of deodorant. I always buy it at half price. And I like identifying future sports stars. I think I saw Jonathan Thurston playing for Newcastle at one point. I thought this guy is going to be a superstar. And I actually sat next to Bill Shorten in a hotel in Adelaide thinking you'll go close to being PM, and you know, thank God we dodged that bullet. But that's what I'm all about. I just find value. I think, to be perfectly honest with viewers, I am weird. I admit to that. I am different. I will look for a bargain of something I need. But what I have done in my job as a stockbroker, pretty much, I've dealt with over 1,000 people, and I think I've got a decent cross-section of personalities, the psychology. And luckily, since I do polarise, the financial press want to talk to me. So I've got a few channels, a few gigs running at the moment. And I pretty much live by the mantra. Now, this is a quote that I mashed together, that fear is temporary, greed is perpetual, and human stupidity is infinite. And I think that's what's driven stock markets since the 1600s. It's driven tulips, it's driven property in Japan, it's driven crypto, it's driven Sydney, Melbourne real estate. And the thing viewers should be mindful of is that stupid money can take assets into overvalued territory and they can stay there. And stupid money can keep undervalued assets that way for many years. So that's the mantra I live with. I was just going to introduce myself pretty much to viewers there. So who'd have thought in 2020 that would be my setup? I just love working from home. Obviously, I can hang clothes where I want. I am an absolute messy person. I've got my screens running. What I've done during this period is I've pretty much watched every live Pearl Jam concert imaginable. So now my life revolves around Best of Jimmy Barnes on rotation, because I think when you're investing, speculating, it's always good to have positive, uplifting music. And I actually look forward to the day when music gets back to guitar, bass and drums instead of deconstructed avo on toast and a chai latte. So it'll come. Rock isn't dead, but pretty much that's my life at the moment. I like working from home pretty much 80% of the time, maybe 90%, because I can tell people, I can tell guide clients and be strictly honest with them, because there's pretty much no friends when it comes to money. And I value my IP and I don't want other people knowing what I'm doing. But so that's pretty much my life at the moment. I love it. I mean, I'm 12 seconds from the bed to that setup. I'm a minimalist apart from that mess. So anyway, I'm going to be honest with viewers. I was at a dinner a few weeks ago and the waitress came up to me and said, well, how's your been? Your year 2020 been? And I said, well, it's actually been the best year of my life. I think the pandemic has helped me forge a beautiful personal relationship. It's made me work harder. It's made me reassess all my values. And that translated to the scoreboard. I put out some of these stocks at the start of 2019. There was a bit of a backlash over it, but base case, we achieved about 128% return. Some clients obviously did quite a bit better, because I always stipulate to clients effective use of capital. If you've made a few 100% on something, sell some and let's look for the next one. Some of those stocks have actually continued on. Exafarm just recently hit 85. The bottom one, Nanolos, had a strong run to into the 20s. So it's I put together a team I think that can perform for clients, and I should, you know, it should be clear that these stocks often will struggle, and nothing that goes up 500, 1,000% is going to do it in a straight line. Interestingly, I calculated the return of these stocks from the March lows, and it was around 406%. So when the market was getting poleaxed, when the Dow was dropping 1,000 to 2,000 points a night, I actually had clients that came in, had a bit of cash and was buying these quality companies at a third to a half of where they are now. So look, it was a great year on the scoreboard again, but my concern is that it has been too easy. So let's move to my forecast for this year. I'm calling the ASX lower. I've put Sydney house prices down 12%, Melbourne 12%. I am on the cusp of conceding to Stephen Kokoulis. That is going to cost me $2,500. But I'm happy with my principles. I love the fact that homeowners in financial distress are going to have another. They've had another year of a window to decide whether to sell or not. And I think that's a great result. I'm going to lose the bet fair and square. It doesn't matter that a global pandemic has saved that situation, because pretty much property markets haven't been natural. So I'm going to cop that. I'll find a way. Actually, I should just pay it. I won't have a GoFundMe because that's embarrassing. In the AFL, I like Port Adelaide. I think I've called that probably a year too early, and I think Penrith can do it in the NRL. So I'm looking at gold and silver, regenerative medicine, uranium, diversified explorers and undervalued industrial companies. Always have a focus on precious metals as well and silver. So anyway, that's my list for people to have a look at. Already though, I sent this list out about the 18th of December. So some of those stocks have already performed. Narada's almost doubled. Exafarm's gone from 33 to 85. But the point is that I look at small companies with the potential to become much bigger ones. And I like to reiterate that, look, these are not rubbish, garbage, speculative companies that you're hoping for will do something. My role is to find these companies early. I have done it before. I floated Independence Group about 18, 19 years ago. That went from 4 million to about 6 billion. Personally, I made 1,000 times my money on it. But had I held a little bit longer, I would have had a winning lotto ticket as well. I also raised some money for Northern Star at 5 cents when I thought Bill Beament could be a rising star of the Australian gold industry. And he's taken that company to $16. So it's all about finding good managers, because the good teams are going to get offered the projects. With Independence Group, Chris Bonwick at the time was at a barbecue and he heard that a nickel mine was for sale for $15 million. And I think that project now has probably paid $500 million in tax. So anyway, I'll go to I call this the placemat edition for clients. If they want to make a placemat of my top tips, I'm just going to have another sip of champagne. Oh, that's great. So look, I'll talk through a couple of these stocks. I think it's a good idea for viewers if they're keen to do their own research. The first one, Alta Zinc, is a zinc company in Italy, trading around 0.6 cents. It's run by Garrett Harris, who took Adriatic Metals from about 15 cents to $1.20, and their zinc results have been sensational. So I think this is a company that could grow. There's strong demand for high quality zinc. It's close to zinc smelters. And interestingly, the EV theme has made a bit of a comeback. So there's now a renewed focus on the likes of cobalt, and they have a pretty handy cobalt project as well. What is tough is the capital structure. It needs to be addressed. There's far too many shares on issue, but they can fix that. Adalta is one of my favorite biotechs. They're addressing idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. Obviously, I'm still sober because I could pronounce that properly. And they have an alliance with GE Healthcare. So they're around 14 cents. Eagle Mountain, I think, is one of the best copper stories on the ASX. They're based in Arizona. They're finding more copper. The managing director, Charles Bass, has done it before. He's taken mining companies from nothing and built them up. Red Metal, what I like doing as an advisor is finding companies that have the support of majors that could make a major discovery. And these guys are around 11 cents. And to me, out of the exploration companies on the ASX, that's got the best risk reward. Now, the company did absolute jack last year. It had a little bit of a run on the silver price. Sadly, the managing director's dad died rather suddenly, but he's going to regroup. And Oz Minerals, which are a major Australian mining company, have a joint venture with them. And this is a company that could go from 11, in the event of a discovery, could go 11 cents to 50 and so on. And we've also seen the likes of Chalice, which was trading at 12, it was a classic days of our livestock, 11, 12 cents. And suddenly it has a discovery up at Julimar and it goes to $4.60. So what I'm focused on is these, I call them life-changing returns, but as you know, people, when they make too much money, can become a complete dick and develop bad habits, so it can also destroy your life. Exafarm has been really good to me. I took part in that IPO. I helped build that company from the ground up. They recently hit 85 cents off a low of 14.5. I must admit, I am on the top 20 shareholder list, and I bet at times my kids go and multiply my shares by the share price, but I'm not going to just give them money for the sake of it. I think it's a good lesson. But Exafarm is one of only two listed Exazome companies in the world, also with Kodiak Biosciences. So the future could be Exazomes, but I should warn viewers that we have already made multiples on our money. And the chances are, once this company starts to really kick, I should disclose that obviously we're going to be net sellers because we have all the stock, but my buying at the moment has been relatively light and we've taken profits. Mako Gold's a great growth opportunity in Africa, run by true discovery people, Peter and Ann Ledwich. They're around 12 cents. I really like that stock. Hammer Metals made a discovery for me last week. That was the one that almost tripled in a day. So here's to Hammer Metals. Some other ones to watch there. Narada showed a 57% reduction in overall cholesterol in mice. Now, these mice are genetically bred to mimic the human systems, and they've also just released that they had a significant impact on LDL as well. And I know that every time I mention cholesterol stocks, people say, well, it can be fixed by diet and exercise, but let's be honest, who the hell really does that? Another one I'll mention is Allumin. They, pretty much the management team that was the understudy to Bill Beament at Northern Star. And I think that that's probably one of the best gold growth stocks I've ever seen. Just the disclaimer on this one, viewers, is that the best gold companies have been able to grow when the gold price takes a bit of a hammering and they've been able to go out and buy cheap assets. So, you know, anyone that says they could have ridden Northern Star from 5 cents to $16 would have had to undergo a 68% correction in the major Australian gold index. So often the best approach is to just let these things run. Down the bottom, I have a company called Godolphin, which isn't named after a racing stable. But to me, that's one of the most perfect mining speculative stocks, because you've got lower risk projects and you've also got them drilling for a porphyry system, which could be a major discovery. And we had one of those with Staveley, which went 15 cents to $1.42 when they hit 40% copper in Victoria. So Godolphin, again, light red metal, you always have the potential to lose, to drop 30 to 40% on paper, because someone could sell due to a divorce, the Dow Jones might get belted. But even in the worst markets, these big discoveries still get valued, if not overvalued. And that goes way back to Minotaur Gold in 2001, when they drilled into Prominent Hill and the shares went 10 cents and eventually got taken over. So anyway, that's my team at the moment. But this game isn't easy and it isn't for everyone. And those are the market depths of two of my stocks that have really performed. On the left is Eagle Mountain. You can see that stock looks absolutely friendless. And that was during the COVID crunch, when buyers were scarce and people were willing to sell. And it would have taken courage to stick a bid at 9 cents. But those shares since March have recovered to almost a high of 50 cents. So often these market depths to a buyer look as pristine as a public toilet, but sometimes you've just got to say, well, is the world going to end or not? And that's it. And the world's always going to have a demand for copper, even more so with the EV thing, which is emerging as well. Exafarm looked pretty ugly as well. Again, this stock got down to 14.5 cents. It's by far my biggest position. I could have panicked. I chose not to. And as I mentioned before, they recently hit 85 cents and happy days. So what I'm going to share with viewers now is my financial strategy, which I'm not ashamed to do. I'm not embarrassed. So pretty much I've backed a stable of biotechs. I've backed them to the hilt. I've gone to seminars. I've met with management. These are extreme risk reward scenarios. And again, I only recommend a small portion of your net worth that you're prepared to lose to back these companies at the start. I mean, Oz Minerals, Sandfire, BHP, Rio, a classic bad example is Fortescue, which went 9 cents to now $250 equivalent. But you would have had to have been in prison or comatose to hold that stock all the way through. I've bought some diversified explorers such as Red Metal, Godolphin, that offer the chance of a life-changing or a life-destroying discovery, because these guys are the best geologists in the business. They're, you're also going to get plenty of dud holes during the year, but these are quality people and they have the capacity to raise money at the right time. So I don't know, I've become used to this, to be speculating in these companies. And I know for a lot of people that they might see them as extremely high risk, but once you become comfortable with it, it's all about risk reward. And I did have that discovery last week. Suddenly one of my stocks, Hammer Metals, hit some copper in a joint venture with JOGMEC. And they almost tripled. Actually, in fact, now they kicked on and the stock has tripled in a few sessions. But what I've done is start to run I'm now working 6 days a week. On Sundays, I will run client Zoom strategy meetings one-on-one just to reiterate that you shouldn't get ahead of yourself. You've got to stay humble. And I've just got to get clients sorted out portfolio-wise as well. So this discovery and the rate of some of these stocks running has just made me think, well, what the hell am I doing? I need to take a step back. I need to just re-energize, rethink my strategies. And I thought, well, my stock exposure is adequate enough. And rather with the winnings, go buy a pink diamond, a Louis Vuitton handbag for my partner, a Rolex, or building delusions of grandeur, I've actually gone all in on the BBUS ETF around $1.45. And I'm not ashamed to say that this bet is over $100,000. I've done this on the basis that if the Dow Jones doesn't undergo a massive correction over the next 12 months, I'm still going to make money on my portfolio. But I've got no doubts that with Biden taking power, he's going to wind back a lot of Trump's policies. Don't get me wrong, my care for politics is minimal. I'd rather focus on making money and being good to my family. But I just think that we're in for some 1,000-point down nights on the Dow. I think world markets are in a state of delusion. I can see that index coming under a lot of pressure. And based on that ETF, I know I'm actually going to tell people, go out and do your own research, but for every 1% fall in the Dow, this should increase between about 2.25% to 2.75%. So pretty much I've made that bet. I had no misfeelings in hitting the buy button. I just think, well, okay, the money-making process has just been far too easy. And I think, wait a sec, slow down. If I do get some bad nights on the Dow, it does drop a few thousand points. That will give me the profit to, again, go in and buy some of these quality small caps where the money can be made. So anyway, that's what I'm doing. Now, that's the chart of the BBUS, and it was around $15. It's now closed around $1.44. So if you took a negative view in 2016, you'd be pretty much wiped out. on that return. But again, I wasn't involved then. I just found this beautiful financial instrument. But you can see that uptick during COVID, that this can be quite a profitable investment. And I view this as better than having money in the bank. I don't know what viewers think, but I just cannot see the US market melting up. Who knows? I might be wrong, but to me, this is the most obvious profit opportunity I've ever seen at the moment. And again, there's always the disclaimer that, yeah, I could be wrong. Maybe I've gone too hard. But to me, the world is on a precipice. Markets can actually get belted on good news. I think what you found with the US markets and the Australian market is the financial and health recovery can often be factored into share prices already. And when you've got a stock like Woolworths, which is largely defensive, trading on a PE of about 48 times, you know something's quite amiss, because that's traditionally a defensive stock. And when the Japanese Nikkei crashed in 1989, the average PE ratio was 52 times. That's pretty much my way of thinking. And market sentiment can change on a dime. So anyway, what I do in my life, I try and work out what really sparks joy. And buying a $969,000 house out near a suburb which is pretty much sunk and Lendlease are going to have to buy, I don't think that's going to spark any joy for anyone, to be honest. I don't know how many, you're probably 50 Ks plus away from the CBD. You're out there in a concrete jungle. You are probably going to be under bucket loads of mortgage stress. You've then got the economy. You've then got all these houses that obviously look attractive. It's a bit like a South American swimsuit parade where everything looks attractive, or for the ladies, Magic Mike show. But to me, that doesn't spark any joy whatsoever. Despite what has been the best year of my life last year, flowing into a great discovery already this year, I'm quite content to live in a small unit. It has everything I need. I don't need a Ferrari with personalized plates. I don't need a trophy woman, even though our viewers will know that I view her as at 9.5. But I think the moral of the story there is, viewers, that if you've got a bit of personality, you can attract women if you've got the courage to talk to them, and the reverse. So actually, what really has sparked joy, apart from a bit of success last year, being able to go out and enjoy restaurants in Perth, to live pretty much a normal life. But here are a couple of things that have sparked joy for me. One of them was getting into the New South Wales Police. That's a photo of me from, actually, that was 1994. And that was the time when the cost of a house relative to wages was actually affordable. So prior to that, I could actually afford a unit in Bondi. And I think I bought that unit at 2.4 times my terrible police salary. So this was not far from Bondi Beach. And from memory, I paid $115,000 for it. But in those days, Bondi was uncrowded. You didn't have the hipster, deconstructed Vegemite on toast crowd. I could actually go to Bondi Beach and actually get a wave. So those were the days when, relative to wages, houses were affordable. But that all changed in 1995 when we had this great disconnect. But really what sparked absolute shitloads of joy was when Darren Albert scored that try against Manly. Because let's face it, everyone hates Manly. And as you can see, I'm standing there. That's me behind Darren Albert in my shirt and my cap. And to me, that was one of the happiest days of my life, to be honest. And to me, it's little things that can spark joy, not working all your life to leave your kids $1 million and to make them happy and to have a life slaving over a mortgage, being a debt slave, having your kids blow up their afterpay accounts. To me, I don't want to become spiritual or anything like that, but I just think consumerism sucks. And actually the most success I've had, the more I've earned, the less I want. So, you know, I'll go through my unit and throw out a third of my possessions. I just love being a minimalist. I love where I live. I think Perth is a beautiful place to live. And people have got to work out, well, what makes you happy? And I don't write letters to the editor. I acknowledge conspiracy theories, but to me, life's too short. I'm here to provide for my partner, to provide for my kids, and to have a good life. And luckily, that's what we've been afforded in Perth. But I think it's only going to take one idiot to ruin that for everyone. So my final slide, I'll probably have to describe it. So let's look at life. You chip away. You do the Andy Dufresne. You have the poster there. You find a geological hammer. You find a tunnel. It takes years to create that tunnel. You then go through a heap of shit to get to where you need to go, what he went through to get out. And then you've got one or two outcomes. You know, life, you're at that final scene where Red walks up the beach. Life's good. Or you end up wanting to ring Tammy from My Budget, where your debt situation spirals out of control. You lose focus, your mortgage holiday with the bank ends, and you're fighting off debt collectors in your life. So the way I see it is that this is the sad situation of our economy of Australia, where we've been led to believe that you must jump on the property ladder, you must be mortgaged to the absolute hilt to be happy, to create wealth, when I think the key to financial wealth is going to be those that are debt-free, have the capacity to move, are not under financial pressure. And what I try and do, money's obviously the result of what I do for a living. But to me, you know, I just want to deal with humble people. And I think honestly, life's too short to be a debt slave, to worry about your mortgage, to worry about your job security. And I think that life's going to become pretty tough for those in the outer suburbs, where the median price of a house is still way more than what it costs to live in the beautiful regional town of Perth. So anyway, that's my presentation. I'll just take another sip of this beautiful bubbles, Martin. And I'm back. And I'm back. So hopefully I polarised a few people.
I think you probably did, looking at the looking at the conversations. A couple of people said, oh, I'm still here. Yeah, I'm still here. I've just been listening to you. Now, There's a load of loads and loads of questions, but I just wanted to pick this one up from Donna from earlier on, because it's at one level a very basic question, but it's actually quite a thought-provoking question too, and it's this, Tony. What is the stock market and how does it work? Now, we know, of course, that the stock market is essentially a market created where you can invest in particular stocks or bonds or whatever, right? And you can have a piece of an ownership of a company. But how does it work? Because, what you said just a little while ago was that there are some stocks that actually have performed really well. There are others that have performed less well. You also made the point that some of the bigger stocks probably are dragging their chain a bit. So what's your real perspective on how the stock market really works?
Okay, it's a place for company to raise capital and then they issue more shares. The bigger companies tend to be dominated by institutions. So if you look at the share prices of some of the bigger companies, you'll see the bank stocks, which will, Macquarie got over $100 a share. So that's where the big companies go to raise money. I've actually floated some companies that have looked to raise money. Exafarm, we raised $8 million for them to research exosomes. And that company, I think, is now capped at about 80 million. So you get your value uplift to see that. But what COVID has done is turn our market into an absolute casino. So there's lots of people that are staying home in their PJs, probably smoking cigarettes, that are computerized trading, that are on social media, pushing stocks to the hilt. And I think for a lot of people that get into the stock market, if you follow the rumor-driven path, you're going to lose money for about 5 years. And that actually happened to me. So yeah, I see a lot of negative comments about stocks, but values is still there. You've got to, if you buy the right company at the right price and you buy a ticket on the journey, that's where the real money is made. And I know it's very daunting, but you know, I've survived every correction from the tsunami, September 11, COVID, the dot-com bubble as well. But what I've found, Martin, is if you buy a fundamentally sound company at the right price, that's where you make your money. So I actually wrote a book on the stock market, but it's probably one level up from the basic understanding.
Okay, now thank you for that, Tony. And, you know, there is as many opinions about the stock market as there are people, I think.
Yeah.
And what I would say, and I always say, is it's really important just not to follow the herd, but to do your own work and try and get to understand it, because people can make money, but they can lose money as well. And the risk is, of course, that if you back the wrong horse at the wrong point in the cycle, then you can lose a lot of money. So it's pretty important to get the basics right. Now, another area of conversation is Perth property. Let me just pick up this one. So this is from Justin. Perth market compared to Melbourne, is it a good investment to buy in Perth over the 10 to 15 years? So let's just take it into two pieces, right? Firstly, of course, some interesting changes in the Perth market. There's some upside after having drifted lower for 7, 8, 9 years, although not universally so. And the relative performance of Perth now to Melbourne is getting interesting.
Oh, most certainly. I built a house in East Victoria Park, which is about 6 kilometres from the city, in 2009. I was a bit of an idiot because it was a 5x2 brand new home. And again, what happened was we had a bit of a spike in East Victoria Park. So we actually sold it almost at the peak. But generally, the Perth market it's like being sandpapered to death, probably for the last 6.5 years. But what's happened now, we actually have a rental crisis I likened to 2006, where the vacancy rate is now under 1%. And there actually was an interesting article that 800 people had inquired over a 2-bedroom unit in Bassendean. Now that's just absolutely insane, because Bassendean's an outer suburb. And we've also had 700 applications for a unit in Vic Park. And I always look around the rental market in my area, and rents are increasing, and there's a scarcity of decent places to live. I'm in the Leederville area, where you could almost walk to the city, you're 9 kilometres from the beach. So previous rentals, you know, have gone from $350, and I'm actually waiting for a huge rental slog to come for me, because what I do is I have a mortgage on the unit I'm talking to you now from. I also rent the unit from behind to give a bit of separation with my kids, and that works really well. But I know that I'm going to cop it when I sign the next lease as well, and it's very tight here. And I also follow the property market, say in a 10-kilometre radius, and a lot of the houses in the 5 to 6K are getting snapped up very quickly. And if you look at a suburb like Yokine, Dianella, these are less than 10 kilometres from the city, and pretty much everything is under offer. So I guess viewers should realise that in 2006, Perth was briefly more expensive than Sydney. And I know Sydney's got the Harbour Bridge, the Opera House. It's also got Military Road and Parramatta Road, those great thoroughfares where life's great. But I think Perth potentially, and Perth could become a safe haven, Martin. The iron ore price is surging. There's a lot of confidence in Perth. And I think, you know, people are moving to the likes of Orange, Mudgee, Broken Hill, East Dubbo, et cetera, et cetera. And those regional prices in some areas are actually more than Perth, which is a perfectly functioning city. So I just can't believe my luck. I went out not that long ago and sold two cars to a car dealer, and I chucked that into a buy tech stock. My kids hate me even more than they already did. But to me, it's all about lifestyle. It's all about location and not having financial stress. So I think Perth is a great place. We've had, as I said, 6.5 years of being sandpaper to death. But if you pick your right property, like suburbs like Bayswater, we had Balcatta, which is not far from Carinup, not far from the beach, less than 10 Ks from the city, where you could buy a two-story show home for around $500,000. So I think the economy is going to be in a lot of stress, under pressure once the stimulus wears off. But, you know, I think Perth, very similar to Adelaide, along the lines of Brisbane, could be a good place because you can buy a house close to the city or a unit for around 4 to 5 times price to income ratios.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's about picking the battle, I think. And look, following up on that, Sean asked the question here. Would love to get yours, my and your views on the current situation with Mandra and the mortgage stress that we've heard plenty of. Well, I'll throw some data in there. Mandra's still in some difficulty. There's a little bit of movement up, but from a very, very low level. Prices dropped in Mandra about 30 to 35% from their peaks 7 or 8 years ago. There is still a huge amount of property investment in and around that area that are underwater, and a lot of negative equity, and mortgage stress still remains quite high. So whilst there are some areas where I think things are not looking too bad closer into Perth, I have to say that I don't see the same evidence further out. And in fact, there was some interesting news quite recently where a couple of properties were deeply discounted to sell simply because they had to sell them. So to my mind, the outer lying suburbs are still in deep doo-doo. What do you think?
I couldn't agree more. And it was highlighted by the tour that John Adams and Robbie Berwick took. Remember, they were filming around Mandra. I just think that those areas are always going to appeal for the retirees, but you're still not getting a lot of value. And there's also quite a lot of risk in those areas. Perth has been slowly recovering, but to me, you've got to look within a 10-kilometer radius of the city. We haven't seen that big push towards regional areas, although a lot of people are going to move south. So the market, certainly in regional areas, has been distorted. But I guess I liken it to when I went to visit my sister in Chester in the UK. I actually walked out early in the morning and thought I'd run into a cafe, but I ended up doing the servo coffee thing. I think people honestly are going to get the total shits with the tree change. And again, seaside properties are going to be quite expensive. So to me, Mandra, a bit of a poor man's Gold Coast, to be honest.
Yeah, and I can tell you that there are still some interesting areas around the Gold Coast and Sunshine Coast, which are not doing anything like as well as the online blogs and portals would have you believe. I'm still looking at quite a lot of particularly units that are really struggling. Now, this is an interesting one. I don't know whether you've got any answers. I haven't, but I'll just throw this one up, Tony, because I'm interested in your perspective. This is, do you have any advice on how to discover if a local council is close to bankruptcy or is actually effective and well organised? It's something we are considering with a possible move. I actually don't know how to take the pulse on the local council. So maybe other people in the chat have got some suggestions, but I can't add anything to that one.
Well, Perth City Council has been a shit fight for years over rorts, and recently Basil Zemplis, which people will know over East, is now the Lord Mayor of Perth. So unbelievable. I don't know how that guy sleeps, but again, the only thing I see from local council really is a garbage collection and an increase in my rates every year. So that's really out of left field, Martin. I can't certainly answer that.
No, I can't either. What I would say, though, interestingly, of course, quite a lot of local authorities are actually issuing bonds at the moment because, of course, the rates are pretty cheap. It will be very interesting to see how their finances are going, because we also know that quite a few people are not paying their rates because of, you know, COVID and everything else that's going on. So a lot of councils are in some significant stress with regard to their finances, but they don't really disclose that much about it, so it's probably tough to find out. Here's another question, which is perhaps a bit more easy to ask. This is from Gold and Alternative Investments. Commentators are saying property will be up 30% in 2021. Well, or so the Reserve Banks was saying, 30% over the next 2 or 3 years if the rate cuts continue. I would love your thoughts on this. It seems a little crazy, but then money is cheap, cheap, cheap. Yeah. Well, my perspective is, yeah, there is a scenario where prices could rise. The Reserve Banks, who basically takes no account of the debt, is basically saying that if you cut interest rates, prices go higher, right? So that's the purely mechanistic view they've got. And that was a paper published by Mr. Tulip some years ago. That is where that 30% number comes from. Now, a few of the other commentators have now switched from CBA, of course, was talking a 30% fall and now saying a 10 to 15% rise. UBS is saying 15 to 20% over 3 years. So there is definitely a change in the weather. But the point is, and as Tanya made the point earlier on, there are still significant risks around all over the place, not just in property. And I will continue to run multiple scenarios, but for me, 30% is probably over-egged. What do you think, Tony?
Well, I did a lot of reading on Morgan Kelly's research, and he said that in a bubble, you lose 70% of your upside. So if a place goes from half a mil to a mil, that's you're going to lose 350 grand of that gain. And I think sooner rather than later, the property market is going to revert back to fundamentals. It's going to revert back to the employment situation. And the real risk is that rates actually start to increase. And I say to people, look, do a stress test at 6 to 7% on a mortgage rate within the next 5 to 8 years. So I just think that the market is, it's not a natural market. We do have quite a lot of dumb money that believes the mainstream press, and sentiment towards property could really plummet at any time. So I maintain the view that, look, I am not going to win my bet with a coup. There's not a hope in hell of that. But once the COVID safety blanket is removed, we're going to get back to fundamentals. We're going to get back to supply demand. We're going to have a lot of people that can't afford their mortgages. You only need 2 or 3 houses in a block to be sold at a discount, and suddenly the real estate agent has those two magic words called price discovery. So I know that things have been delayed. COVID has caused the market pretty much to be in a trading halt. However, I still maintain the view that property is 40% overvalued, overreased, and I know that I'm not going to be proven right this year or maybe next, but as sure as shit, Martin, this is an off-the-shelf speculative bubble. Rates are going to increase. It's interesting that the average RBA cash rate over the long term is still over 6%, and the long-term mortgage rate was quoted at 9.41. That could still be in the high eights. So rates are not going to stay low forever. If you've got an $800,000 mortgage and you live at East Dubbo and your property drops in value from $800,000 to $500,000 and you're paying $65,000 to $70,000 in interest per annum, as I said before, that's the equivalent of being sandpapered to debt. So I don't know what drugs these people are on. And I think they're just basing it on the current performance, which is an unnatural market. So, look, we're not different in Australia. Australia represents only 2.4% of the global economy on a stock market valuation. We're nobody. We're nobody. And if the likes of LA, London, Dubai, New York, I mean, the ratios in Orange are probably higher than New York. I think we're delusional in this country. Admittedly, it's a great place to live, but we cannot defy the laws of economics or gravity.
No, absolutely right. And I should just at this point mention that next week I will be updating my property and stress scenarios up to the end of January, and I will be taking into account the latest data from the Reserve Bank and their modelling. I will still have multiple scenarios, and the scenarios do include at one end significant price rises but also significant price falls. So join the show on the 2nd of February at 8 p.m. Sydney time to find out the latest scenarios and how that translates into property and mortgage stress. It'll be worth watching, hopefully. Now, here's an interesting one. There was an announcement from Biden that all US administrative government vehicles will be EV, electronic vehicles. And the question, of course, is what does that do to things like zinc and cobalt? Any thoughts on that, Tony?
Yeah, it's quite an interesting scenario, because I was actually involved in lithium way back in 2008. So the lithium bubble actually took its time, but zinc exploration has been restricted. It's had poor pricing. So again, that gets back to my company, Alta Zinc, which I disclose I own. And cobalt, the cobalt price is hovering around $39,000. So those looking for a bit of local exposure should look at RD Resources. The code is ARL. So I think the future looks certainly good for zinc, cobalt, and copper. And I just, the way the EVs are coming along, I know that the MG electric vehicle has just been released, and it's got quite good reviews already, even though you can really only drive 260 kilometres. So I think the EV future will slowly develop. It hasn't really taken up as quickly in Australia as the rest of the world. But when you've got poor amounts spent on zinc exploration and cobalt and even copper, I think the future looks certainly good for those metals. And I'd be looking at some strong companies at the bottom of the cycle. But no, it's certainly true, Martin. And that's going to be a bit of a trend. I was involved in some lithium companies just before it burst in January 2018. But a fortune was made. Now it's slow and steady. But viewers should be mindful that all the cobalt stocks, all the lithium stocks, again, it looks like a swimsuit parade. You know you'll take any one of them home, but you've got to work out who's the real deal. And when you look at a bubble, you go back to uranium. There was a couple of uranium companies, then suddenly there's 150, and most of them are just companies trying to get a sugar hit to the share price. But you really need to go through these companies and look for the quality. But you know, that theme's certainly spot on.
Okay, thank you for that, Tony. Very interesting. And yeah, watch this space, I think, is probably the message there. Now here's another one which I don't think I fully understand. Narada is not an FPO. What is it? Are there any downsides it not being an FPO? FPO? I don't know. Do you know what that means?
It's pretty much a CDI, which is a chest deposit receipt, because the company is actually based in the US. So it's domiciled, they have a Sydney office in Gordon, but they're actually in the US. So half the Narada board actually reside. You've got John Moore, Chris Cox, and Marcus Frampton that resides in the States. So you can have CDIs trade on the Australian exchange. And I should disclose that for me, I am a top 20 shareholder of Narada. I have promoted the company in the low 20s, Martin, but now it's 44 cents on the back of some good cholesterol results. And for me, I've thrown quite a lot of money at it. But to me, look, it's simply a different type of instrument you can trade on the ASX, and it's perfectly safe.
Yeah, good point. Thank you very much for that. Now, there's an interesting question which I just want to run it by you, and it's this. It was actually asked before the show started. Mm-hmm. Portfolio construction. You mentioned it earlier on. You mentioned your own situation. What I'm trying to get at, and this is what the question was asking, was if you think about portfolio construction, you know, the sort of the theory often is you have a portfolio. At its heart, there should be some sort of stability in the portfolio. Around the edge, there's a little bit of, if you like, exploration, speculation, right? And then there may be a little bit of cash around the edge for emergencies. What's your sense in terms of some of those small caps we've been talking about? Do you see those as in that sort of speculative rim around the edge, or is it part of a core holding, do you think?
Oh, what a fantastic question. Look, I always say to people, you've got to have exposure to gold and silver. And I'm actually talking at a virtual gold conference on the 4th of February. So it's a gold and alternate investments. So you'll see some gold companies, and I'll also talk about my views of precious metals. So that's well worth listening. I believe it's free. Elio D'Amato, who I will disclose, I actually do a show with him once a month. He's written quite a good article on silver, which is on the AFR online, and that was released today. So the way I see it is, in a portfolio, you need to have like the rhythm section. It's like the bass player and the drums. So I've likened putting together a portfolio to a music group. You need like an Angus Young out there on lead guitar. You need a voice like Axl Rose or Mike Patton. But to me, that gets back to portfolio construction. The way I see it is, when I get a new client, and I hope I don't get too many more because I'll have to shut up shop, but I say, look, how much are you willing to risk? And then I look at, wait a sec, we need to be defensive whilst being aggressive. And that's why I've spent $130,000 on that US ETF, saying, well, the US is overpriced, it's going to be a shit show. That's how you make money. You then have a spread of biotech, diversified exploration companies, and I look towards a small industrial that's under the radar, and that means pretty much a company that will get towards being cash flow positive. And once a small industrial goes cash flow positive, all the small funds jump on it, and they tend to become overvalued because fund managers want their bonuses, they want to maintain their house in Mossman and their BMW. But where I say to look, I've got a lot of people that have come for your program that have $2 million in net wealth. They spread it amongst banks. They have precious metals. And I'll say, well, look, if you're willing to risk 5 to 10% of your money, I will design a portfolio for you and we go from there. And I say to clients, look, it's on the job training. Those that had that copper stock, you know, tripled the money in a day. Others can make 10 times, but the risk is you might have the right company, but the wrong person. And I like to deal, you know, there was a test they do on four-year-olds called the marshmallow test. And they work it out that those can hold off, become accumulators. Those that snatch the marshmallows seem to become the less patient. But to me, the other risk is that you become so diversified, you have what's called a balanced portfolio, which means you make the fund managers and the managers a lot of money and you go nowhere. So look, it's a fine art. It's taken me 22 years to work out how to do it, but I don't want someone's net worth. I just want a small percentage of it to say, look, learn, let's have some fun, let's have a bit of defense, something that's a bit aggressive. But as I said many times, Martin, big companies once were small ones, and I do not deal in the rubbish of the ASX. There's lots of companies that are rubbish. They're driven by social media, but the only way to make sustainable returns in small caps is to be focused, deal with quality, and be prepared for that volatility. But, you know, portfolio construction, good luck doing it yourself sometimes for the inexperienced.
Yeah, it's tough. And in fact, I'll be chatting with somebody else over the next couple of days on this very question of advice and portfolios and things, because I actually think there's a lot of rubbish being spruiked about at the moment. I saw somebody the other day saying, well, you know, in the good old days, what you wanted to do was to have about 3 years worth of cash and then invest everything else. And they say, no, now you need only 1 year of cash because effectively returns are so low on money in the bank. So therefore you can invest the extra 2 years in markets. And when you actually looked at who'd written it, guess what they were selling? Investments for those 2 years. And you're thinking, well, you can't take anything that anybody says without understanding their motivation.
Well, you've got to look at it. The finance industry likes to complicate things to make you think as though you can't understand it. You go into a bloody Dimmicks and look at how many diet books are on the shelf, like the South Beach diet, the cabbage soup diet. For F's sake, eat less and exercise more. It's pretty bloody simple. Or buy a company and look at the valuation and ride the journey with management, buy solid companies. I mean, the finance industry likes to overcomplicate things. You know, music will get back to guitar, bass, and drums. And if you actually, it's like a light and easy ad. You see them, well, I dropped 10 kilos. Well, of course you did because you're eating less. I mean, it's not frigging rocket science or quantum physics, for God's sake. Look, what I do is, it does look simple, but it's not. I've taken years to get where I am. It involves research, instinct, looking at a manager directly and saying, well, are you for real or you're full of shit? But life isn't that complicated. So anyway, where was I?
That's good. I must just put this one up. I've just come across this one. This is quite good. Martin sounds about 15 years younger tonight. Now, I'm not sure whether that's true or not, or whether it's the virtual influence of the champagne, Tony. Maybe that's what it is. But what I will say is that I've been doing some work in the background on the studio, and that includes the sound and the lighting and some of the automation. So, in fact, the studio is much more automated than previously, and I think that's taken some of the pressure off. So it's I can focus more on the conversations and less on the technology. That's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it. Now, this is one. I don't know whether this is one you can answer. From Nico, does 250k get me a seat at the table?
Oh, that sounds like the Easter from The Big Short. Look, I'll be honest with you. I like the underdog. So I'll deal with a client who's got, say, you need at least $10,000, then, you know, we're pushing shit uphill to get you anywhere with that. But, you know, certainly 250K gets you a seat at the table. But, again, it's how much you're willing to risk. And I love what I do. But, 250K, you'll be one of my best clients on that starting basis. And if we do well, I'll have cases of Verve to drink on this show. None.
Very good. Now, here's one which is quite deep and meaningful, I think. First home buyer, 45 years, single mum, 300k deposit, 90,000 a year in income, want to live in the hills, 3160. Good time to buy or wait? Highly anxious. Love your show. I think this really highlights the issue that many people are wrestling with, Tony, at the moment. You know, with all of the spruiking that's going on in terms of the property sector, all of the government saying, you know, rates are really low, you should buy, you hear all these stimulus packages, etc., etc. It's a really tricky time to know what to do, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I mean, we've got initiatives here in Perth where someone earning just over $30,000 a year with not much hope can get a loan for $400,000 to $500,000. So again, I don't know that postcode. I don't know where she is, but she seems to be on quite a solid financial footing. But it's a case of, are you there to make money or are you there for the lifestyle? And I guess, I don't want to sound too stereotypical, but you never know. A single mum might partner up and then that situation becomes a lot better. So I don't know if I said the right thing, but you really, well, let's be honest. There's always a chance that you might meet someone great and then suddenly your situation changes. But from that financial footing, you'd certainly do a postcode check, Martin, and see what's around. But $90,000 a year income, which is pretty much the average, massive deposit. But again, do you really want to chip away crawl through rubbish to get there, then suddenly lose all your savings. That's the issue we've got.
So this highlights, I think, for me, Tony, the complexity of the current situation. And I've always said to people, you know, you may still want to buy whatever, wherever you are in the market. And if you're buying for an occupation and you can afford it and you've got a safe and secure job, and you can afford the thought that you might lose some of that equity if prices fall, it's still a reasonable proposition. Don't buy for I don't think investment properties at the moment are actually worth going after. There are too many uncertainties, too many risks. I'm seeing so many people in negative returns on yields on investment properties. But owner occupation is always much more finely balanced. But it really comes down to three questions. The first question is, what's the dynamic of the postcode? And if you want to get information about that particular postcode, send me a message via the blog and I'll send you the stress data for that particular area. That will give you some really good sense as to where we are. Secondly, certainty of income, you know, is in the current environment. Because obviously you don't want to commit yourself to a mortgage and then discover that, in fact, you know, the mortgage is unserviceable. And then the third thing is, how long are you thinking of buying for? Because I think that people make the mistake sometimes of trying to buy just thinking 1 or 2 years again. My view is you should be thinking 5 to 10 years. Is it a 5 to 10 year proposition? If it is, then it still can make some sense. And for actually for an occupation, very often it doesn't all matter where in the cycle you buy, providing that you don't mind the risk of losing some of your capital. But there you go, that's just my perspective.
Yeah, again, look, she's obviously got a $300,000 deposit. I mean, that must have taken a long time to save. If she hasn't saved it, it might be an inheritance. But you've got to think, well, where is she going to get a decent return on that money? I mean, Bernie Madoff could have got her 11% per annum, pretty much guaranteed. But, you know.
Ponzi.
Yeah, well, what do you do?
No, and,
yeah, I just think that she's obviously scared. And again, if you buy property, they can't really take your money. But have the prices in that postcode already been bid up by people that want a tree changed? That finally will realise, hey, what the hell have I done, and want to sell. So I think that's certainly a personal decision. But anyone with $300,000 cash, who's conservative, should seek some financial advice.
Good advice. Last point I'd make is that there is an increasing listings happening now, even as we speak. My surveys are highlighting a lot of people are going to put their property in the market. There's going to be more stuff coming on over the next 2 to 3 months. So that's something else to bear in mind. Listings dropped over the Christmas New Year period, but they're rising quite fast. So another reason just to keep watching the market. And finally, it's worth getting information about what sold over the last 12 months. Don't get it from the publicly available property portals because they don't give you the real information. Go to the Valuer General sites. You can get information both in Victoria and New South Wales at a postcode level, and that will give you some very important information about what properties are really worth. So a bit of work to be done, but that may help to alleviate some of the stress that you mentioned there. Okay, Tony, change of track. Now, I'm not sure that I should put this one up, but I'm going to put this one up. Okay. This is from Sir Cookie Boy. Your thoughts on Bitcoin. Get the swear jar ready. Now, before I come to you, I'm just going to do this because I can. Hopefully I can. Let's do that. There you go. There you go. So that's the latest on Bitcoin. Up then down. And of course, nobody knows whether it's going to go up, down, or what it's going to do. Perspective?
Well, you got to look at that poor guy that's got 2 password attempts on $200 million. How could you lose that piece of friggin' paper? Life's too short for that shit. Or what about the guy that chucked out his hard drive and has offered $92 million for them to, I think it's in Wales, to dig it up?
Yes.
I mean, holy hell. And you look at those poor people that went into XRP and suddenly the SEC's all over them. So it's completely missed that run. Look, the good thing is that none of these cryptos have any earnings. It's driven by Chartists. What gives me some relief is that I was actually at one of Kerry Stevens's conferences, and I saw the Bitcoin story presented to me. The guy was drinking whiskey at the time, but that's when that uptick made people a lot of money. But on that drop, you can see how volatile it is. But it's 10 bagged and changed since then. But to me, I like equities. I'm good at what I do, but I'm not going to recommend my clients going to that when it's red or black. And it's prone to that volatility. And I think it's, you know, I look back at gold and silver, which have a lot of history, even though they're not as volatile as Bitcoin. But no, I'm going to steer well clear of cryptos. And, you know, I have trouble remembering all of my passwords, but hopefully that guy's got a password hint, but surely someone can help him. But yeah, anyway.
Look, the thing about cryptos generally is people need to tease out two things. Strategically long-term, blockchains and devolved digital currencies will probably come. In the short term, Bitcoin is morphing, you know, is it digital gold? Is it something else? Is it going to be the future? No, nobody knows. Nobody knows whether the 40,000 or 50,000, you know, is actually fair value, because you can't value it, right? So it's a speculative venture. Might go up, might go down, might go to the moon, might crash and burn. Nobody knows. So it's a high risk situation. And my perspective is simply going back to that discussion about the portfolio construction, you know, core portfolio of stuff that you can understand and control. If you want to speculate around the edge with a little bit, well, feel free, but as long as you can afford to lose it. But I wouldn't be putting my superannuation into a Bitcoin or any of the other cryptos at the moment, because the future is just too uncertain.
Oh yeah, I think so. And I have enough pressure of someone backbetting me at a blackjack table than recommending, you know, to client a crypto that could go up or down, because pretty much that's what it's all about. And there's no earnings. And someone saying that I do not understand Bitcoin. Well, I understand equities. I mean, I welcome people that can, if they're good at it, stick to it. I'm just saying it's not for me, and I don't need to understand it. I couldn't care less, but I am cognizant of the fact that people have made a lot of money on it. But I'll stick to gold, silver, and small companies, and I'd rather survive another 20 years doing what I do than blow up on crypto.
Absolutely. And, you know, people need to make their own decisions, but to do a little bit of the work. Don't just go and listen to the YouTube spruikers. Remember that there are YouTube spruikers out there who make money themselves from Bitcoin, as indeed there are YouTube spruikers who make money out of selling gold and silver, etc., etc. Everyone's got a vested interest. So it's important to understand people's motivations for saying what they're saying. You know, I've got a little bit of Bitcoin because I'm interested in seeing how it behaves, and also because I wanted to learn about it. But it's not a core part of my portfolio. And if I lost it, it wouldn't be the end of the world. If it triples or goes up even more than that, then I'll have made a bit. But, you know, that's just sort of the way I think about it. But everyone has to make their own decisions. Well, Tony, it's 9:20. We're running out of time. I'm just going to go and see. This is from Nico. Your thoughts on the Perth Mint buying physical silver bullion and special coins?
Fantastic idea. Absolutely could not recommend that enough. I think it's something good for the younger generation to go out and start build a holding in silver bars. And as long as you have somewhere to store it, I think physical silver is a good place, because at times we know that it's going to have a huge run. Fortunately, I'm in contact with Jordan Alessio, who went from ABC Bullion. He's now an investment consultant at the Perth Mint. And some of those depository projects, schemes, are quite attractive, where your fees are actually less than 1%. So you can actually build a holding in silver through a direct debit, where you can dollar cost average silver and the fees are minimal, or you can take physical delivery of it. But what's really crimped the performance of precious metals in Australia is the fact that the Aussie dollar's around 77 instead of 57. So in Aussie dollar terms, gold has dropped a few hundred dollars. But I think to have a defensive side of your portfolio, certainly look towards gold and silver, and that BBUS that I've chucked a lot of money at. So, you know, I thought I could buy a Maserati, or I could buy a bet against America. I mean, hashtag no brainer.
Fair enough. And this is one from Nick again. Best gold stocks to invest in. I've got positions in CHN and MKG. Any others worth looking at?
Yeah, I mentioned Mako Gold, which is around 12 cents. There has been quite some large takeover offers for African gold companies. I've met with Peter and Ann Ledwich. I really like MKG, Mako Gold. Blue Ocean Equities value that at between 25 and 30 cents a share. They're 12 cents. I've also been buying the absolute bejesus out of Aumin, code AUN. This is the technical team that came out of Northern Star. And it's the type of people that if they don't find it, they'll acquire it. And Bill Beament took essentially Northern Star from 1 cent to $16 on buying his first gold mine and then enduring a gold downturn. So they're certainly two worth looking at. My Hammer Metals, unfortunately for viewers, has tripled over the last week. But to me, those are the type of gold stocks worth looking at. If you like a bit of upside risk on a discovery, GRL Godolphin, they're around 25 cents. I should disclose I've got about $70,000 on this one. People might say, hey, Lacantro, you're crazy, but they do have gold resources in the ground. They have good management and their market cap's only around $20 million. So if they hit the big discovery at Copper Hill East, that thing will go through a dollar like a dodgy Vindaloo.
I love the analogy. Yeah. This is one from Bryce, who's, by the way, been throwing in the old dollar for when you have the occasional exclusive, attorney. Food commodities is an interesting question. You know, what's the... I sometimes say, well, things like water, you know, in, water stocks in the future, food stocks in the future. We know the population is growing around the world. We know that the ability to be able to grow food is dependent on soils. Well, climate change may impact that. Any particular thoughts that you may have on that?
Well, they've all been increasing, haven't they? And I think with the crops, you've got weather factors. You're going to have the population that's, you know, striving for these, for water especially. And you should remember that Bury off the Big Short, once he bet against the US housing market, has bought a lot of water stocks, even though he might have already sold them. So, again, dealing in grain, cattle, agriculture has been quite a difficult place to invest in. You probably saw trading places with the orange juice futures and pork bellies. But again, a lot of these markets, you are punting on them. But again, look at the prices of farmland out near Orange. It's just gone absolutely through the roof. So, I mean, again, if you can find some futures on it. But to me, that's one area I'm not really invested in at all.
Fair enough. And here's one from Sukuki again. Property keeper ends on the 31st of March. Not only property keeper, but job keeper, job seeker, the interest and principal repayment holidays from the banks. A lot of things are closing out at the end of March. My perspective is that this is going to have a significant economic shock on the broader economy unless the government kicks them forward again, which they may well do, bearing in mind there'll be an election later in the year. What's your perspective on that, Tony?
Oh, yeah, I think that you can't keep stimulating things forever. I know that the payments have been reduced. I know that they're subsidising staycations now in Perth. You know, they've been subsidising meals. I mean, it's like me giving my kids a couple hundred thousand dollars each. It's not going to teach them any lessons whatsoever. It's always going to wear off. But we need to look at the trajectory of property prices coming into the federal election. They were on a tear in a southerly direction, and they were also heading south prior to the pandemic, where, you know, even though the mortgage deferrals have dropped from about 400,000 down to 90,000, that's still a lot of people that can't pay their mortgage. And we know that all assets are overvalued, let's be honest. And no, I just think it's going to have a huge impact. And for many, they would be hoping that COVID is going to continue. And some of the smarter ones that sit down with their partner and work out, hey, we're in a lot of financial poo-poo at the moment, they can still sell to a greater idiot. But at some point, those greater idiots are going to run out. So, look, it's not a scenario really I want to see. But I just think that, you know, people are inherently greedy. A lot of people financially are illiterate. You've got to look at other countries, for example, where people are happy to rent. You know, some of these things about hanging to a house or buying a house is we need a yard. I mean, take your kids to a friggin' park. We need more bedrooms, bunk beds. You know, essentially, you use a lounge, you use a kitchen, you use a bathroom. Who wants the thought of cleaning? Australian houses are just too big, and there's not going to be enough buyers to absorb the supply side. This retailing bubble will not last. You got to look at the money. JB Hi-Fi profits through the absolute roof. I mean, online spending up 160%. That cannot be maintained, because once the economy reverts back to fundamentals, people are going to find out that asset prices are overvalued, and the dumb money will run out. So no, I'm very unfortunately negative on the Australian economy. Saddened for families that undergo significant financial stress, that have saved up for years in the foolish belief that house prices can only go up. And shame on the RBA and shame on the mainstream media for putting good, hardworking people in that predicament. So sadly, the party's over, and the party has kept going a little bit due to a global pandemic.
And very low interest rates and stupid policies from central banks around the world, which is continuing. Well, Tony, I think we're pretty much done. I haven't got through all the questions that people asked, but we could be going another couple of hours and I still wouldn't have got through them. But I just want to say thank you so much for you spending so much of your time with us this evening and for sharing your thoughts so freely. You, I think earlier on, left the details of how to contact you. I will put them in the comments below if people want to follow up with you after the show. I always enjoy speaking with you because you're like a breath of fresh air. You know, you call it straight, you call it as it is, but you've got a very clear perspective, which I think is really worth taking time to understand. And just to underscore again, it's important that people do the work and do some thinking, not just sort of follow the herd and hope it'll all be perfect, because of course there is a lot of risk if you get it wrong. And at the moment, I think both you and I will both agree that the risks in the markets are extreme, and the chances of them going higher is probably lower than going lower. So plan accordingly.
Yes, and the moral of the story is, if you want to lose weight, diet and exercise, and markets are essentially a collective of people with no friggin' idea what they're doing. So that's the way of the world, and walk the world, and that's it, Martin. And an absolute pleasure. And I'd actually like people not to contact me because my head hurts. I've got far too many clients. Look, like the Sydney Swans, let's adopt a strict no dickhead policy. But how much money is enough? Really, I've got a great life. I've got a great partner. I'm on this channel. I mean, I'm pretty blessed as it is. But again, people should follow that Lecantro's put his nuts on the line. I've chucked $130,000 betting against the US, and let's see how it goes in a year's time.
Absolutely right. And just to make the point, Sir Cookie has said there's $100 going to your charity of choice. Tony. So just nominate that. Anyway, I want to say thank you all very much for spending time with us this evening. And Tony, thank you very much for your time tonight. Sorry that you disappeared without me being able to thank you face to face, as it were. Just to remind everybody that on the 2nd of February 2021, I will be on again, and we'll be talking specifically about property stress and scenarios. And there will be some very important updates to the data set because of what's happened recently. So with that, I wish you a pleasant evening, and thank you very much for spending time with us. If there are specific questions that we couldn't answer tonight and you still want answers, if you contact me via the DFA blog, I'll try and make sure some of those questions get answered another way. Anyway, thank you very much for your time. Very pleased to have somebody on. Thank you for all of those who contributed via Super Chat. It really is appreciated. It helps us just to cover the costs of what we do. And I'll look forward to seeing you next time. This is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, signing off.